warrior who protects his people from monstrous giants. He was the idol of Vikings and barbarians in the darkest age ever known to man. But few know the reality behind his myth. He battled the ancient world's most colossal sea monster. And he was the last hope for Europe's pagans as they defied the armies of Christendom. Fact and fiction collide in the myth of the mighty Thor. Two arch enemies battle to the death. Thor, the thunder god, against a staggering beast. A giant snake who strikes with lethal force. It is man versus monster. Thor unleashes his deadliest weapon, lightning from his magic hammer, as thunder rocks heaven and earth. The myth of Thor is filled with these epic showdowns, heroic battles against creatures who threaten mankind.
Thor is the champion of the gods. He's the great fighter who can be brought out when something is really bad. You don't go to Thor for wisdom. Go to Thor because he's going to protect you against the evil monsters.
Tales of Thor's adventures provided escape from one of the bleakest periods in human history, the Dark Ages of the first millennium AD. It was a time when the Norse world, stretching from the British Isles to the Baltic Sea, was in turmoil.
It's an agricultural society where people were farming and surviving kind of at the very edge of how it was possible to survive because it was cold. It was the northern part of Europe. It wasn't around the Mediterranean where it was much easier to grow things. And it tended to be, from everything we can tell, quite violent.
War, famine, and death were daily facts of life on the desolate northern fringes of Europe. But the myth of Thor brought a sense of order to the chaos.
It was a religion of the countryside. Paganism actually is a Latin word that describes that, what the country people believe in. And paganism is not really well organized either. It's not like the Greek pantheon in the sense that it's very well organized and everybody knows whose responsibilities and who's more important than whom. It's very different.
The view of human life in that mythology was a fairly dark, a fairly stern one. Human beings didn't look forward to the kind of salvation in heaven at the end of time that's promised in the Christian stories. They had a kind of a darker, a more sorrowful view of life. People have to show great courage and hardiness in the face of enormous obstacles.
For inspiration, the people looked to Thor.
Well, that leads us right into Thor's day here in the bunker. Terrible time of year, and it's the 7th, right? Let me double check. I get that wrong all the time. And it is the 8th of June 2017 here in the bunker. Right, we're ready to go with another show. How do you like this clusterfuck in Washington, D.C. with all these politicians and press and everything, and everybody's trying to get one up on the other? You know, you realize, maybe you don't realize, at least 90% of these people are flat-ass cowards if they were faced with any kind of physical threat. In any kind of physical threat, they would run like rabbits as fast as they could go. But as long as they've got the FBI and the state police and the military and all those people out there that they can call to save their ass, they're big and bold and tough. And it's funnier than hell to watch. Well, if old J. Edgar Hoover was still around and they hadn't murdered him, yeah, they murdered him. He was seen being carried out of his back door of his apartment and wrapped in a sheet. A little suspicious, don't you think? Yeah, He wouldn't be taking this shit. That Comey wouldn't. No matter what you think of J. Edgar, he was a tough hombre. Yeah. He wouldn't take that stuff. He could take a whipping from that girlfriend who was actually a boy. Lawson was his name? No, that's not it. But anyhow, he'd take a whipping from that guy, I'll tell you. Because they were sweethearts. Used to gather together down there near San Diego at La Costa Country Club. There used to be a few bungalows down there where some of these kind of people, including the mob, hung out. J. Edgar and his girlfriend used to hang out down there. They did some weird shit, and I used to hear some of it because I was only a few miles away from La Costa. I got in trouble with a sheriff down there, old Sheriff Duffy. He was in charge for about 25 years. In fact, I supported the guy when I first moved to Fallbrook, California. Yeah, but he was hooked up with the mob, and I got to talking about it around town, how he was hooked up with the mob, and some of his boys wanted to give me a little trouble. Not much, not anything big and terrible, but he didn't like me talking about him and the mob. Of course, then the newspapers came out with it, and that was that. Personally, I don't care. Probably the mob was much more honest than any of those politicians, and including the sheriff. Well, revisionist history likes to talk about bad boys, and I got one. Here's a bad boy for you. Yeah, this is a Japanese guy. World War II. Shiro, it's he. It's he. Shiro, it's he. Yeah, that's his name. This is another evil incarnate. He was the director of Unit 731, facility dedicated to researching and developing biochemical weapons for the Japanese in World War II. Also known as the Factory of Death. Personnel of Unit 731 performed the most unimaginable, inhumane, and gut-wrenching experiments on human test subjects, such as live vivisection without anesthesia, forced male prisoners to rape female prisoners to induce venereal disease to find preventative methods for VD, should they be contracted by the troops who raped women or prostitutes at the front. The Japanese doctors would often rape the female prisoners themselves to induce pregnancy and then dissect the female prisoners to experiment on the unborn fetuses. Yeah. Frostbite testing, electrocution, the prisoners to death, gassing or burning prisoners alive, bound prisoners on wooden stakes and placed them around the center of a circle and then increasing the radius outward, and then drop anti-personnel bombs or grenades at the center to study the damage on human bodies by shrapnel to determine effective treatments for Japanese troops. Yeah, they did stuff like that. Compression experiment, wherein the prisoners were placed inside a pressure chamber. The researchers would increase the pressure inside the chamber to such a point as to crush the prisoners, causing their internal organs and eyes to explode. All of the aforementioned atrocities and other horrific acts of humanity perpetrated by Unit 731 can be read from the Amazon.com Factories of Death, Japanese Biological Warfare from 32 to 45. And the American cover-up. Yeah, there was a cover-up. Despite the appalling atrocities Shiro Itsuhi and his subordinates had committed, the majority of them were granted exemption from war crime prosecution by the Americans after World War II ended in the Far East, because the Americans needed the experimental data and the biochemical warfare knowledge generated in Unit 731. Shiro Itsuhi was even invited to deliver lectures on biochemical warfare in the U.S. He died of cancer and was never prosecuted for his wartime atrocities. Most of his subordinates would go on to occupy prominent positions in the scientific, medical establishments, or become professors at prestigious universities in post-war Japan. The Americans granted the immunity from war crime prosecution to Shiro Itsuki and members of his Unit 731 constitute one of the worst incidents of miscarriage of justice in post-war World War II period. Americans get 50 years in prison for having a trunk full of marijuana. Wow. But these were not, there were others. There were some Germans too that even the SS hated. But I'll tell you one thing, these were not the worst bastards. No, it was the politicians and the corporations that created a situation to set up this stuff. They are even worse. They set up the conditions for a war where this stuff could take place. The politicians, who hardly ever get any criminal charges at all. They're doing it right now in Washington, D.C., having to do with the Middle East and Syria and all that kind of stuff. Just remember, it's politicians that send out these people who end up doing these dastardly deeds. If they didn't set up the wars, these dastardly deeds would not happen. Oh boy, how about this killing and bombing in Iran? Killed a whole bunch of people and even went after the tomb of the Ayatollah. What do you think about that? Well, you know what I think about it? If the CIA is not behind this, I'll kiss your ass. Think about it. You know, as I travel around and I look at the immense obesity in this country, I was thinking last night, if they set up stations in every town and city, and in big cities, many stations, and get the liposuctions going, they could get enough fat out of this population to power the country. Power the lights, power everything, including cars. I'll tell you, that's a good idea. I should make a fortune with that idea. It would make the obese people happy because they'd lose all this fat, and every 6 months they could go in and get it liposuctioned out and convert it to power for the people. The black KKK over there in Chicago is not going to take this lying down. They're trying to use this crime prediction algorithm over there. But a group of journalists have sued the Chicago Police Department to obtain public records about a controversial algorithm the department uses to predict how likely someone is to commit a crime, especially black people. And they don't want that out there. They don't want that exposed, man. Journalists, which include a Chicago Sun-Times and an independent journalist whose previous lawsuit against CPD led to the release of the Laquan McDonald shooting video, of course, have filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the Chicago Police Department. They're claiming that the department, it says here, they're calming that the department has withheld public information about the algorithm, which identifies citizens who land on the department's strategic subject list, known as heat list. Well, that'll teach you cops to mind your own business. Interfering with the black KKK, they're going to get you. The CPD's heat list is a list of hundreds of people, Negroes mostly, in the city, has determined are likely to be involved in a crime. Well, of course, go down to City Hall and that would be easy. Almost everybody in City Hall is likely to be committing a crime. Quit picking on the Negroes. Based on a computer algorithm, the specific variables that the algorithm takes into account are unknown, though officials told The Verge that location, whether someone has been involved in a crime, and if someone is socially connected to a known criminal or a victim, are part of it. More information on the CPD's algorithm is part of what the lawsuit hopes to uncover. We want to protect that black KKK, man. The lawsuit is also seeking information about the names on the list. how names are found to run on the logarithm, and they want to make sure how many of them are black, of course, because we cannot attack the blacks. Critics, even though they're committing, what, 80% of the crime in Chicago? Critics wonder if predictive policing, such as CPD's heat list logarithm, is racist. Aha! And some are skeptical that it's even effective in the first place. Yeah, the black KK's fighting back. A RAND report found that the practice did not reduce homicides, and in some cases unnecessarily targets people for police attention. We don't want people having a police attention, man. Since its inception, America has thrown a grotesque percentage comparable of people of color in the criminal system that destabilizes the communities where the people live. Brandon Smith, the journalist responsible for unearthing the McDonald tape and a plaintiff in the suit, told Chicago Inno over email. Quote, it is my goal to find and discuss the mechanisms of which this inequality of opportunity is carried out and perpetuated. This is the journalism of democracy, discovering why some well-defined groups of people, as opposed to random folks here and there, don't get a fair shot at health, wealth, and happiness. Well, one of the reasons you may be running this logarithm down in the white neighborhoods is because they're not coming up with a list of felons. The CPD introduced a logarithm after it received a $2 million grant in 2009 from the National Institute of Justice, which is obviously a racist outfit, which awarded money to departments for predictive policing. Now what you gonna do, cops? Gotta figure some way to get these black criminals, right? Or suspected black criminals, right? Well, you just have to go back to the drawing board. Modern computerized programs are racist. You can't do that. Take them out in the white working class neighborhoods and use them out there, but don't use them in the black areas. Uh-oh. News reports on crime from 2016 show that in Obamsky's last year in office, violent crimes increased. This was the second year this happened, as 2015 saw a rise in crime as well. The Brenham Center for Justice has previously reported that the murder rate rose 13.2% in America's largest cities in 2015. This reportedly pointed out that just three cities, Negro Baltimore, Negro Chicago, and Negro Washington, D.C., were responsible for more than half of the rise in homicides. The 2016 report showed another jump in homicide in American cities by 13.1%. with Chi-Town alone being responsible for 55.1% of the increase in homicide. Wow. Especially on the South Side. Crime is still relatively low. Compared to what? After nearly two decades of declining crime rates? Even increases like this still put in some safest recent years. However, the jump is alarming, and some believe that its concentration in Negro areas can be attributed to what some call the Ferguson effect. Wow, man. Conservative writer Heather McDonald has written about the Ferguson effect before, saying at the end of the 2016 that, quote, a drop of proactive policing leading to rising crime is the only explanation for the crime increase that matches the data. Well, I would say it's because cops got pissed off and wouldn't arrest anybody. They said, piss on it, we're not going to risk our lives. Well, why be a cop at all? When McDonald tried to speak at Claremont McKenna College in April, she was shouted down with chants of Black Lives Matter. Fuck the police. Oh, wow. And the Pew Research study in early 2017 showed that 72% of the police officers have become less willing to stop and question people who seem suspicious. unless they're white and wearing a hood. Attorney General Jeff Sessions remarked in February on the rise of rates of crime, saying since 2014, the murder rate in 27 of our country's 35 largest cities has gone up. Homicide rates in Chicago, Baltimore, that's Negro Chicago, Negro Baltimore, Negro Milwaukee, and Negro Memphis have returned to levels not seen in two decades. Last year, Chicago had more than 4,000 shooting victims and 762 murders. And Baltimore murder rate was its second highest ever. These numbers should trouble all of us. I know it's troubling me terribly. My worry is that this is not a blip or an anomaly, but the start of a dangerous new trend that could reverse the hard-won gains of the past four decades. Gains that made America safer and more prosperous place. Sessions added. Where the fuck is Sessions been at? Safer place. You calling this a safer place? President Trump made fighting crime an issue in his campaign running on restoring law and order in the country. Well, at least among white boys. Trump, WhiteHouse.gov site states, quote, our job is not to make life more comfortable for the Negro looter or the violent Negro disruptor. Don't you wish he did say that? Our job is to make life more comfortable for parents who want their kids to be able to walk the streets safely and sell their marijuana. Or the senior citizen waiting on a bus. Well, yesterday in L.A., a senior citizen, Korean War vet, or Vietnam War vet, one of the two, was walking to the store to get lottery tickets, and he was followed by a Negro and beaten to death, and he died. He died, man. But who gives a shit about white seniors? They're expendable. And of hostile rhetoric directed at police, and website states, quote, the dangerous anti-police atmosphere in America is wrong. We've got to have more police. Let's put them in a white neighborhood. Don't put them in the Negro neighborhood. You're going to offend them. And what about the law-abiding Negro? He doesn't have a chance. He doesn't have a damn chance. Police arrested two people Tuesday on charges for inciting racial hatred after a video appeared on Facebook and YouTube showing a man burning a copy of the Koran. Well, I don't think you should burn those books like the Bible and the Koran. I think you should tax these people. Tax the Muslim churches, tax the Christian churches, tax the Buddhist churches, and help run this country and build the infrastructure. Tax them, you chicken shits. The video, which has not been published by Mail Online, shows a man saying, quote, I've been trying to get my poxy fire started for half hour wondering what shit I can get it going with. I found this. And then tearing the pages from the Koran and lighting them on fire. Oh, what a horrible person. I have nothing against burning any of these religious books, but I don't think it's the best way to do it. They got a lot of money on these churches. That's the first thing they do is amass lots of money, and all these evangelists, yeah. Tax them. West Mercia police arrested a Worcester man and a woman from Evesham in connection with the video, according to the Daily Mail. Now, this is happening in England. Jolly old England. The arrests come about after police failed to prevent multiple terror attacks in the UK this year. That's because they don't have any guns. Well, some of them have guns now, but they're not enough guns. Most of the cops on the beat don't have guns in Britain. They got nightsticks. Despite British intelligence identifying 23,000 potential jihadist killers living in Britain, according to the report published May the 27th. Of course, you wouldn't want to hurt the feelings of these boys coming in here from Africa. You gotta make them feel welcome. That's right. Give them a Cadillac and a white woman. Of this pool of potential guerrilla soldiers, it says terrorists here, but I call them guerrillas, 3,000 are suspected of posing an imminent threat. Well, no. While the other 20,000 have been investigated in the past and categorized as posing residual risk. Like he may set you on fire. Both Manchester attacker Salman Abidi and Westminster killer Khalid Massoud were subjects of interest. We're going to be interested in them. We'll have their pictures on the wall of the police station. But we're not under surveillance. We should double the size of MI5 as we did in World War II and expand the number of intelligence-led police by the thousands, said Anthony Gleese, head of security and intelligence at the University of Buckingham. Instead, British security forces are arresting racially inflammatory subjects who didn't have enough wood for a fire, man. This was a concerning incident. We will be carrying out a thorough investigation, man, of that guy burning that Koran. It is, somebody's going to get cancer from breathing that smoke from the Koran, because that causes cancer. It is being investigated as a hate crime. When are they ever going to investigate a love crime? That's what I'm waiting on. Quote, we have been in contact with our local Muslim community via Consular Jabarias. If anyone has any concerns about the social media posts that potentially incite hate, I would urge them not to share the post, but to report the incident to the police, and we'll get 5,000 police on that guy's doorstep overnight. And social media company at the earliest opportunity. We want to take care of our Muslim brothers. Including the mayor of London. Twitter said it does not comment on individual accounts for privacy and security reasons, and Facebook said it is investigating the post. Well, I wonder if they're investigating my tweets, man. They're going to let me tweet. If they let the Muslims tweet, then I can tweet. Tweet, tweet. By the way, @TerribleTommy is my tweet address. Get up there and check it out. Get on my list and make count you as one of my supporters, will you? That's @TerribleTommy tweet. I'm actually a happy racist today. My day is going fine. I'm just so damn happy as a racist, I can't believe it. I got a call from Washington, D.C. Somebody wanted me to be on television. And I said, well, maybe. What's your requirements? They said. I said, $1,000 cash, hotel room and meals. I haven't heard back from them. We're not going to go on any more television programs where they call me a son of a bitch and they want me to do it for free? Are you kidding? Only people like Duke would do that. About once a week, they have a break in the D.B. Cooper hijacking case. That's going to go on for 100 years. They're never going to figure that damn thing out. Who cares? I'm glad he got all that money. That thrills me. Like Jesse James and all those boys. I love them. That was brilliant. Stealing all that money and jumping out of the back of an airplane and never get caught. Whoa. He's a reporter all pissed off at Maxine Waters, you know, the chief nigger, the representative. She don't represent me. I don't know who the hell she represents. But this reporter, you know, remember the one up there in Montana? He had to pay. He paid $50,000 to get out of a situation where he body slammed a reporter from the British newspaper. Well, this guy says Representative Maxine Waters just shoved me and angrily stormed off as I asked her questions. Well. I don't think he's going to get any money because she's a great high Negro. And you can't do that. You got to let him shove you because that's a love shove, man. Well, 4 killed and 8 wounded in Chicago shootings on Wednesday. There you go, man. I don't know how many they're going to do for Thursday, but maybe it'll be more. Here's a story I'm proud of, boy. Ha ha. In late May, Carla decided to build a house right smack dab on the highway median, right in the middle of the road, about 60 miles south of Haskell. I'm not sure where Haskell's at. She picked a spot that was relatively level and wide enough for a narrow, modest home, where the grass seemed relatively healthy enough for a yard and a garden. This wasn't legal, of course, but she knew a highway patrol officer named Jessup, who said he'd look the other way and encourage his fellow officers to do the same. He said he'd also discourage passerbys from getting too busy, nosy. She and Jessup had gone to prom together both junior and senior years, way back in the day before there were even smartphones. Not that she necessarily wouldn't have decided to build a house on the median if this hadn't had happened, but what had happened was Carla's husband of 14 years had been in a car accident and taken a pretty bad blow to the head, and she spent months helping him recover, which was not pretty, by the way. And then as soon as he was well enough, he decided to leave Carla and go live on a Dharma compound in Iowa. Seriously, after all that, so now Carla's house was too big and she needed something smaller. And the medium house occurred to her one day in late May out of the blue when she was driving to the Costco in Haskell. Jessup had tried feebly to talk her out of it. Putting a house right there in the middle of the highway doesn't make sense logistically. Why? It'll be loud with all the traffic. I'll get used to it. You'll be boxed in on either side, trapped. I have nowhere I need to be, honestly. What about work? Everything I do, I can do on the computer with the internet and the Google Docs and the spreadsheets and whatnot. What will you do for food? I'll grow whatever I can myself and have the rest delivered, or I'll eat roadkill. I'm just kidding about the last part. You'll get awfully lonely. Being lonely is not the end of the world. People need to be more comfortable being alone, as far as I'm concerned. What if Paul comes back from Iowa? I'm afraid that ship has sailed. Jessup was right about the noise, though she would never have admitted it to him. Being completely surrounded by the sound of cars and trucks speeding at 60, 70, and 80 miles per hour at all hours took some getting used to. But after a few months, the commotion blended in with everything else, and she did get used to it, and earplugs helped her sleep at night. The garden and spreadsheets kept her busy. She kept a big first aid kit in the kitchen for the occasional car accident, but luckily she didn't witness anything too serious nearby. A couple of years into her living in her little medium house, an injured cat limped into her doorstep. She nursed it back to health, but unlike how she'd done with Paul and named him Gregory, he kept mice out of the garden. Speaking of Paul, she heard through the grapevine that he'd given up on the Dharma compound and moved into a one-bedroom apartment in Lincoln. Good for him. Carla saw less and less of Jessup over the years, but each time it seemed to her he was aging horribly. One day he brought by some leftover cake from his retirement party and came right out and said it, quote, "How is it I'm so old and you're so young when you're supposed to be the same age?" Unquote. Carla laughed. "I guess I just eat less sugar and fatty foods. You also used to smoke for a long time, which did not help." "No, seriously, I'm turning 68 next month and I don't look a day past 40. Carla shrugged and filled a bowl with milk for Gregory. A few days later, she got a text from Jessup. "I talked to a friend of mine who's friends with an engineer. He says it's because you live in the medium. The traffic speeding by in one direction counters the traffic speeding by in another direction, which creates a constant friction in the air, keeps the space between them static, so you just kind of stay in place, in time. Isn't that wild?" "Huh?" Carla texts back. "I wish I discovered this 20 years ago." In time, they repainted the entire stretch of highway with some new nanotechnology, something or other that kept the paint illuminated yellow and white all night long. Carla spent most evenings looking at the glowing paint sprawled out as far as she could see in either direction. It was kind of pretty, but she didn't like the light pollution. Then Gregory passed away. She buried him on the border of her garden, spoke a few kind words, cursing a semi that interrupted her with a blaring horn as it sped by. Jessup died to a few years later. She was not able to attend the funeral, but sent a lovely and long email to his widow, which she said she appreciated. One afternoon, Carla's boss, her ninth since she'd began living in the medium, sent her a private message. With the reinstatement of the draft and everything going on, you're suspended from all operations for now. They're reinstating the draft? Yeah, big time. Haven't you been following the news? No, not really. It depresses me most of the time. Okay, well, feel free to keep working on your spreadsheets, and I'll update you when I know more. Carla never heard from her boss again. Over the next few years, the traffic started to thin out more and more until it was just a steady trickle, punctuated with more and more camouflaged Jeeps and Humvees and occasional tank barreling down the highway. She checked in on the news occasionally, but it was always bleak, and eventually her internet quit working altogether. It was just as well. As the traffic died down, Carla became more sensitive to noise, so much so that one night she awoke with a start, sensing someone was poking around in her garden. She grabbed her flashlight and a knife and kicked open the screen door to confront a young man in a police uniform filling a burlap sack with tomatoes and squash. "Listen," he claimed, calmly explained, setting the sack down, "I need food for me and my girlfriend." Quote, "Then get it somewhere else." Unquote. "There's nowhere else. Everything's picked through and I don't know how to grow my own." "Wow." "Then figure it out." I took over for Jessup. Actually, I took over for Jake Sampson, who took over for Jessup. "I've helped guard my weird little house here on the medium. A congressman wanted to make you move out and tear it down, you know, a few years ago. I can't. I just have a few tomatoes." "You most certainly cannot. Things are really rough right now, lady. They're going to make me go to war in Australia, of all places. Australia. Who are we at war with now?" "I don't know. Everybody. Over oil or water. I can't keep track." "Okay. Look, take what you've already picked and don't come back. Find seeds and bury them in the ground and water them. Jesus Christ, it's not rocket science." Traffic continued to thin on the highway more and more until sometimes Carla could go days without seeing a single car or truck pass by. She could tell herself growing older finally, in a strange way getting lonelier with an absence of vehicles. In desperation, one hot August day, she tried to wave down the first car she'd seen in weeks, but it zoomed around past her and continued speeding until it vanished on the horizon. She screamed after it to no avail. In most cases, Carla had been alone for decades, but she was really alone now. So she packed up some clothes and toiletries and some canned food and as much produced produce from her garden as she could carry, a tent, a sleeping bag, and Carla started walking down the highway. She walked for days and saw nobody. She watched vultures picking apart scrawny deer carcasses and wondered if she was the last person on earth. She left the highway and walked along dirt roads and slept in fields and valleys. Finally, after a few weeks of walking, she saw in the distance a camp full of odd, angular, tipi-styled houses glimmering silver, white, and blue under the sun. The camp was cased by a small, tall gate, which a man jumped down from his perch. "Wow. Help you?" the man asked. "Well, I'm looking for a place to stay just for a little bit." The man squinted at her inquisitively. "For a little bit," he echoed. "What year is it?" "Really, all right. Really, it's 2193. Carla didn't understand the really's preceding the year, but she figured in the nearly two centuries since she'd built her house on the medium, people spoke a little different. A man put both palms in the air for some reason. "Are you in CTT or AO or CUR? Carla shook her head, and I don't know what means that means. I'm sorry. "Okay, month. Good. Okay. Whoop, wait a minute here. Quote, "I can stay in your camp for a month, if that's what you're asking. That'll be great. Thank you so much." Unquote. Carla extended her hand to shake his, but he immediately recoiled and shook his head and laughed. "No, no, no, wow." She laughed too, for some reason, like she'd just told a joke she didn't understand. For a little while, they both just laughed together. Then he opened the gate and waved her through. Trying to communicate with other people in the camp was an absurd misadventure, but eventually she was directed to a shiny blue tippy she surmised was to be her own. For the next month anyway, she dropped her backpack, food, and clothes off there. Then, as the sun was setting, she joined the others in the camp for something they referred to as a view. There was a shallow crater in the middle of the camp, covered in freshly cut grass in a circle surrounding it. At the bottom of the crater were large, probably 15-foot-tall panels of screens leaning together to form a pyramid. Carla looked out at the other people watching the screens, their corneas gently illuminating with some sort of technology that enabled them to make sense of whatever was unfolding on the screens before them. To Carla's eyes, it all looked like a slightly psychedelic hodgepodge of flashing bright colors and shapes vaguely resembling objects. Honest, boys and girls, I didn't know this thing was going to be this long. A woman sat down in the grass next to Carla. A breeze passed through them. Carla turned to see the woman studying the screens, her eyes glowing gently green in the night. "What are we watching?" Carla asked the woman, just above a whisper. There was no sound emanating from the screens, no speakers anywhere to be seen. Everything around her was perfectly still and silent except for the lights in the crater. The woman nodded to acknowledge Carla's question but didn't answer her. A few minutes passed and Carla realized the woman was silently crying. Carla scrutinized the screen closely, trying to see what the woman was seeing. She thought she saw palm trees, maybe. Plates piled high with food, a raft in the middle of a body of water, a young boy playing with a yo-yo, people standing on a cliff holding hands. Every time Carla thought she almost had it, the image would turn into something else. "I just wanted to be alone for a while," Carla was fighting back tears now herself, but she didn't understand why. "I didn't realize how much time had passed." The woman reached over and patted Carla's knee. Carla continued, "It's not a crime or anything, living on a highway medium, I mean. I guess technically it's illegal, but it's not like I ever tried to hurt anybody. I'm not petty. I don't go around seeking conflict with everybody. I mean, a war broke out, for God's sake, you know. I didn't have anything to do with that." The screen burst with blue, orange, purple, and gray light. It swirled and shook and changed back and forth and turned into something else, then something else. "And listen, some stupid asshole just up and ran a red light out nowhere and knocked my husband's brain clear into Buddhism land and some other next level spiritual plane of something or other I don't understand. I did the best I could with what I had, and it's what I'm saying. That should mean something." The woman took Carla's hand in hers and gestured at the screen. "Do you see it?" Carla shook her head. "I can't. I don't have the same eyes. Yours are more advanced." Carla's voice cracked, and there were tears now running gently down her face. 2193. Jesus, I didn't realize how much time had passed. I wasn't trying to prove anything or anything like that. the woman leaned in even closer to Carla and put her arm around her, resting her head tenderly on her shoulder. "Do you see it yet?" she asked. "Stop asking me that," Carla whispered through her tears. She felt everything all at once. "Please stop that." Maybe 100 faces were illuminated by the pyramid screen. Carla wiped her tears from her cheeks and looked up into every pair of eyes surrounding her, each glowing a different color, watching the screen before them, blinking open and shut like fireflies in the night. On the screen, Carla saw an operating table. She saw a human heart and lungs and bloody and raw. Carla inhaled deeply and held her breath. On the screen, she saw herself standing in her garden, tall and gigantic, towering above her house, there on the median, towering above everything, invincible. She kept growing bigger and bigger, walking off into the horizon, stepping over state lines and deserts and whole mountain ranges. She was an operating table now. It was her. It was all happening simultaneously. Her heart, her lungs, her blood, she was surrounded by others, smiling, familiar faces. She was so tall she could reach up and touch the moon and spin on her finger. Her veins were as wide as highways. Carla exhaled eventually, "Okay, okay, I see it now." Wow. Interesting story. Longer than I thought. Someone commented on this story, a really good story. I read it in one sitting. I clicked on the link in the email and didn't realize it was fiction for the first few paragraphs. I don't really understand the ending, though, but that might be more about my limitations. I don't quite understand it either. Reminds me of a Science Digest or Popular Mechanics story I read back in the 50s or 60s. The guy recommended putting a vertical windmill types in the mediums on the freeway. And the cars going down one way would spin the turbine one way, and the cars going the other way would turn the turbines the other way, and you'd have generate all electricity you wanted for free. And I wondered why, well, you know why they would never do it, because they can't make any money on it. It'd be cheap and free. They're never going to do something like that. But I thought that was cool, and I think this story reminded me of that. That's why they keep the medium so wide, so you can't sneak up on there and put a turbine on the side of the freeway and get your own power and take wires and go over the fence to your house. Of course, after reading that story, you know that I am nuts, and I admit it. I'm certifiable. If it's weird, I love it. Byline, that's a 10-minute read, that story. It seemed like a hell of a lot longer than 10 minutes to me. Dateline, Budapest. Several of Martin Gronsky's, that's a hard one to pronounce, views are on display in his parliamentary office. An orange and black St. George ribbon, a Russian military decoration used by Russian nationalists as well as secessionists in eastern Ukraine, is tied to a lamp that sits on his desk. "We're very sensitive to the issue of sovereignty," unquote, Gronsky tells BuzzFeed News, and of course BuzzFeed News are not out to make him look good, during an interview that takes place in September. From Washington, you can very easily pull the mustache of the bear. Next door to the bear, you're more careful, he says, while explaining that he would like to see a buffer between Europe and Russia. In a conflict zone of civilizations, there is permanent movement, where there are tectonic plates that are always a problem. If something moves, there are clashes and turbulence. Wow. Two world wars started here, not in Paris or Nebraska or Texas, right here. A graduate of Dublin's Trinity College, Gronsky is a member of the parliament for the radical right-wing party Jobbik. J-O-B-B-I-K. He also serves the party's as the party's deputy parliamentary leader and its vice chairman of Parliamentary Committee on Foreign Affairs. In the space of a decade, Jobbik has grown from a right-wing youth association polling about 2% to a political force polling 20%. According to polls, it is now Hungary's second-largest political party. Jobbik, like similar movements elsewhere in Europe, has in recent years tried to tone down its rhetoric in order to pitch voters with a more centrist voice. Its leader has even posed with puppies as part of the sweetness campaign. Well, wait a minute here. Dr. Erwin Marie Saltman, a senior researcher for the Institute for Strategic Dialogue think tank, told BuzzFeed News that Jobbik works hard to attract voters that want big changes for Hungary, Eurosceptics, disenfranchised voters, and young people wanting to be inspired by a newer, more hands-on party that seems less bureaucratic. There is potential for Jobbik to mobilize more and more support. In many parts of Europe, the popularity of far-right parties and authoritarian populist attitudes is on the rise again. A study published last week by BuzzFeed News revealed that anti-immigrant, invaders, nationalists, and authoritarian attitudes have spread from the political fringes into the mainstream, man. Kaz Muddle, an associate professor of the Department of International Affairs at the University of Georgia, told BuzzFeed News, quote, clearly the populist radical right is experiencing a perfect storm at the moment. The economic crisis, the refugee crisis, the terrorist attacks have created fear and frustration among people who see that their national leaders are pissants, unable to deal with the problem. He added, it is particularly broad perception of crisis that helps the populist radical right, as it means that the established parties cannot cope with the key issues they never could, which means people will look for alternatives even if they are bold ones. We know what that means. A recent government-backed referendum about Hungary accepting immigrant invaders and refugees under mandatory EU-wide quotas was rejected overwhelmingly. Kozlowski says the country's Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, has basically copied Jobbik's immigration policies. But although Orban has stolen the show on immigration, the MP claims Jobbik's success is best explained by his stance against corrupt elites. Yeah. And its opposition to pure neoliberalism. The MP says the party economic policies have more in common with the Greek far-left Syriza and Italy's anti-establishment five-star movement than with other far-right parties in Europe. Immigration is the only common denominator between right-wing parties, he says. There is little doubt that uneven economic progress and low wages have played to Jobbik's advantage. More than 500,000 people, the equivalent of 5% of the country's population, have left Hungary since it joined the EU. McDonald's has so much trouble hiring in the country that it's offering free rooms to out-of-town workers. Wow. However, experts say far-right extremism remains core to Jobbik. At the moment, Jobbik is still limited to its farther extremist elements, being linked with vigilante paramilitary groups like the Hungarian Guards and 64 Counties Youth Movement, Saltzman told BuzzFeed News. Jobbik has two main drivers that distinguish it from other parties. The first is Jobbik's open stance against the corruption of large parties, taking a very anti-elitist position, calling out mainstream officials and parties around a wide range of real and perceived corruption. The second is anti-Roma rhetoric. Although the party has tried to centralize and tone down its openly anti-Gypsy stance, it gained huge amounts of attention for discussing gypsy crime and the inherent criminality among the marginalized minority. Within this has also been the anti-Semitic undertones that has drawn increased support. Picking on those Jews again. There's a difference between the EU migrants and the non-Christian migrants, Huzanski said. We have freedoms in the EU. Jobbik MP has in the past called on government to draw up lists of Jews. Asked to explain this position, the MP tells BuzzFeed News that it's a matter of transparency and national security. He likens the discussion to the double citizenship and the Turkish identity debate in the political correct Germany, or to Congress in the U.S. asking representatives and senators to disclose personal information and conflicts of interest. Quote, we don't know what being Jewish is, he said. Is it a religion, a culture, a social background? Sometimes it's a genetic heritage. I don't know what this Jewish thing is. It's different. It's not like Hungarian or Italian. Here we have lots of Hungarian Jews. That is not a problem. But if a Zionist Jew lives in Hungary, the question arises for me whether he is loyal towards Hungary or Israel. Or does he lie about it? Much of the political debate in Central Europe takes place against a backdrop of conspiracy theories. At times these are homegrown, in others the misinformation is driven by foreign-backed media, particularly from Russia. Or they may be true. Experts are divided whether there is an electoral ceiling to the political parties such as Jobbik and candidates like Marie Le Pen in France. Kaz Muddle told BuzzFeed News that electoral ceilings are always contextual and can be changing during the times of crisis or because of more gradual transformations. As long as most established parties are unable to provide coherent and convincing alternative solutions to the key issues of a growing group of voters, growing groups of voters will look for alternatives. They're going to go National Socialist. You think so? Could be. Zelensky, or whatever his name is bullish on Jobbik prospects. 10 years ago, the party's supporters would be predominantly male from the poorer rural parts of the country, the MP says, but this stereotypical view has changed drastically, and the party is now more geographically and demographically spread, winning by elections even more elite districts among the university students and under 35s. It remains by far the most popular party in Hungary. There was a ceiling to our support, now no longer, the MP says. The public has come to its senses. There you go, that right wing's on the move over there in Hungary. So we'll see how that turns out. Whether it'll be betrayed, like it usually always is, the right wing parties, or not. Maybe not. Notice these hearings in Washington today, how everybody wants to beat up on the Russians. And now it's more of the Democrats beating up on the Russians. Any excuse to keep from doing what they ought to do. I wish the Russians would have interfered with my election and got me in office back in 82. I'd have welcomed their help. Get a kick out of these guys in the right wing who claim that Jews are monolithic. Well, the only thing they're monolithic about is they want to take over every race, infiltrate every race, and use it to their favor. They're not trying to remain just one color, I'll tell you that. They've got all kinds of stuff on the internet how they're creating black Jews all over the place. So when next time a right winger tells you all that stuff about it being, you know, white or Israeli white, look, the Jews' power is infiltrating all the races and using for their benefit. That's what makes them so dangerous. The typical ad on the internet. This is a Jewish website. It's time to act now for racial justice. This MLK weekend, we honor the memory of Martin Luther King Jr. Let's have critical conversations about racial justice. We serve in solidarity to address urgent short-term needs that are the consequences of racism and build relationships between communities with different identities and experiences. How will you, sir? I'm satisfied with saying the Jews are a conspiracy against all men and all religions. Yeah. Very simple. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the bunker. So beware and be fair. Okay, I'll see you. Bye-bye.
You're late.
Missy and I kept talking, and I didn't realize how late it had gotten.
You missed a very dull TV show about Auschwitz. More gruesome film clips, and more puzzled intellectuals declaring their mystification over the systematic murder of millions. The reason why they can never answer the question, how could it possibly happen, is that it's the wrong question. Given what people are, the question is, why doesn't it happen more often? Of course it does. It's been ages since I sat in front of the TV, just changing channels to find something. You see, the whole culture, Nazis, deodorant salesmen, wrestlers, beauty contest, the talk show. Can you imagine the level of a mind that watches wrestling? But the worst are the fundamentalist preachers, third-rate con men telling the poor suckers that watch them that they speak for Jesus and to please send in money. Money, money, money. If Jesus came back and saw what's going on in his name, he'd never stop throwing up.
Oh, God, Frederick.